able to arrive here before 9 o'clock because we were initially to start at 10 o'clock. But we then had to change it because of this request. And we have to finish by the latest 11 o'clock. There's also a request from other members who would like to leave earlier, and that has been granted. I think it will only be in order to congratulate all the parties. That participated in the election, and I think the people have made their voice very clear as to who they want to lead them where. And I hope we will live up to our promises, deliver to our people the services that they so need. I think as South Africans, we need to commend ourselves for the peaceful manner in which these elections were conducted. It was very pleasing to see leaders of our parties at the IEC Center there posing for pictures together. You know, we are very fortunate to be in a situation like this. You know, some other parts of our continent don't know this kind of situation. And I think, you know, we must keep on building up. That we put our country first and not say that the country can go to blazes if I can't lead. So I think we have just demonstrated again that our democracy is really working, and that we are committed to a peaceful country. We may take it for granted, but it's something very special and it's very important. Okay, we will. I guess we all have a copy of the agenda. Do we have any apologies?
Okay, Chair, we have received an apology from Ms. Connie September, won't be able to join us with other commitments. And then Mr. J.T. Kobo will be joining us late, and Mr. Nana, they're on their way. Thank you.
Apologies. I've just been informed that the coffee just arrived now, so I don't know how we want to deal with it, because normally we find the coffee already in front there, but I don't know whether you want us to break for 5 minutes and quickly grab a cup of coffee. That's right. Okay, let's take 5 minutes, just grab a cup of coffee.
think about the industry. Like different levels, skeptical and to say that people and
okay, thanks a lot.
Yeah, I wanted to come to Cape Town. I've never been to Africa, and it's kind of its own thing. But my grandpa traveled here a lot for business. That is his favorite city in the world. So I wanted to come check it out.
You're coming a lot of people from.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You study in school?
I study with a one lesson. Politics, philosophy, and economics.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Why did you decide to come here?
To Tunisia.
Mm-hmm.
I started working part time and then the offering internship, and at that point I haven't really thought about what it's got now. I just started. And then, I don't know, I just keep going. So I've got to stand honest and I don't know what I want to do. I'm going to be studying my honors and something, figuring out what that is, or changing my career.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of politics that you have to do with your
job.
You need to be the best. Very nice thing. That's what I'm thinking about.
Yeah. What's that?
You drink.
Drink?
Yeah.
Alcohol?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, like, okay. I need to talk about the game again. I was saying, one thing I get excited about, like when you look for an Indian family, you go to hope that they do something. You can't do anything. I'm going to find my father, but he likes to have fun.
Yeah, I like having fun.
Yeah, and looking at office is like that.
Yeah.
Really, I mean, Russia, and then I, and you know, so we don't think about ice. Because I just think a lot. But I stopped now, so, and I can't exactly do anything either.
Yeah.
And nobody else not the same. I can do an option for the visiting religious. I think time in my own way. Nobody else. And I'm like a very small NGO, so. No, and Langa doesn't either, I think.
Yeah.
So it's just the same. I just feel really lonely.
I can keep company.
It's been the type of guy. It's the type of guy who wants to talk all the time. If you come into the office, like the funny thing is, just come into the office and it's the same both the time to talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's like that. He'll go into the office and he'll talk the whole time.
Yeah.
And then you'll feel everybody will get into trouble. So like the last thing, he's got into a shitload of trouble when it comes to talk.
Yeah.
With the shell kind of deal. Really nice, but she got that thing, you know, something one thing to pick up, and then she engaged. Not creating, but, and then she'll say something about the talking.
Yeah.
So before, she's actually a lot easier now. Before, we couldn't talk at her. She gets like a.
That's funny.
But like the shop is a cool boss, he really understands. But like everybody's really nice, and everybody's pretty good to me. Like I don't know, the last thing I want to do, I've worked with people, so I usually just about this.
Before we start, I'm going to ask these people on this side, the members, to introduce themselves. Clockwise. Natamukha, you may start.
My name is Aubrey Mugwena. I serve Member of Parliament. I serve on this committee.
I'm Gloria Bowman, a member of this committee.
Rose Santo, serving this committee. Chris Khululu, member of the committee.
Yes, my name is Peter van Dalen. I'm also a member of this committee. Thank you.
Moni van Dijk, member of the committee.
Gerard Koornhof, member of the committee.
Lindy Nana, member of the committee.
Theresa Maduna, Director General of Public Enterprises.
Anthony Kamungoma, Acting DDG, responsible for DINEL.
Morning, my name is Weekend Vangane from the Department of Public Enterprise, Director responsible for DINEL.
Sam from TPE.
you to leave the meeting.
I'm Yulis Orlando from the Communications Office in Parliament.
Okay.
I'm Yashira from SAPA.
SAPA. Okay.
Zahid Adams, PMG.
PMG.
Chris Jones, PMG.
Audrey D'Angelo from Business Report.
Okay, thank you.
Loretta Lawrence, Secretary to the Chairperson.
Honorable Fanny.
Chairperson, just on a point of clarity, I would just like to know before we start with the meeting, through you, Chair, while the DG is present today, whether we can get confirmation from your seat as Chairperson, at the presence of the DG on when we will be informed as a committee on the progress of the implementation of the Transnet pension process that was agreed to by Parliament at the end of last year. Maybe you can just guide us in this regard. Thank you.
Okay, the DG will respond to that.
Do you mean today?
When?
We'll have to check when the opportunity will arrive in the program of the committee. But as we indicated the last time, there are, and of course we have written letters to yourselves, those at least who have taken the matter directly with the department, that there are processes that have been underway, which unfortunately are taking quite a while to wrap up.
Chairperson, sorry, maybe I didn't make myself clear. We just want an indication, not a report now, but indication when the DG will come and address the committee on the whole issue.
Okay. We'll arrangement with the DG to and invite the DG in the next meeting. Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members. We've been asked to present to yourselves on the future of DNEL sub-arrow structures. We have developed a presentation which will briefly locate the company in some historical background, and then we'll look at what's been happening with the company in recent years, and then we'll begin to outline, you know, aspects of the future of the company. As you will know, the company has its roots in the Atlas Aircraft Corporation, 1964. It developed over the years to become DNEL sub aerostructures. As a result of Saab having taken a stake in the company, and of course, currently we refer to just DNEL Saab Aerostructures, but Saab has subsequently withdrawn their stake in the company. And there are some highlights which are indicated in the slides, you know, with regard to some of the deliverables that the company has completed. Including, you know, the Saab Gripen pylon, as well as products for the A400 project, the wing fuselage ferry, which has completed 500 hours of incident-free flight testing. And just this month, last month, the company delivered the first WFF production unit to Airbus. And of course, I've spoken about Saab having exited the partnership. These are the facilities of the company just outside of Ulaan Tambo International Airport in Gauteng province. This is the the WFF, the wing fuselage fairing, which the company has developed. The company that produces complex metal and composite iron structures. That scheme there, you know, where the arrow is pointing, is the part that the company has been allocated to develop for this product. It's a company that's been challenged in terms of performance, as it were. This graph traces the financial performance of the company since 2007-08. You can see the loss position was at its most severest in 2008-09. It is declining, but the company remains still in the red as we speak. In terms of what's happening currently, as I've indicated, the loss situation is still very much a challenge that the company confronts at the moment, although that's coming down steadily. We have the earnings before interest and tax figures for February 2011 of 259 compared to 444 million in March 2009. I've spoken about SAP having exited the company, which means that Genel is 100% shareholder of the company. The company has been undertaking several initiatives to restructure itself out of this challenging situation. It has been reducing labor costs in terms of the labor relations section 8.9 processes. There are significant improvements in financial management and governance. They've been reducing rental costs and sharing space, because that location where I showed you, there are a number of other operations where the company has been able to share services. They are transferring some of their facilities to locations on-site. And of course, the climate survey in terms of the employees of the company has also improved. The operational turnaround of the business continues with a marked improvement in delivery and quality. Airbus is particularly satisfied with the products, the quality of the products that have been delivered, for the and of course the timeliness of the deliverables for the A400 program. But however, the margins on all contracts are under extreme pressure, to a point where I think there needs to be some intervention. To continue on some of the highlights, the company, there is improved governance overall in regard to inventory policy, in regard to procurement practices, and in regard to asset management. And I've already mentioned that they've complied with the A400 contractual commitments with regard to the wing fuselage fairing, with the final design and acceptance certificates already issued by Airbus. They maintained green status on program review meetings with excellent performance rating by the customer, and they've already begun to deliver some of the products. This is the employee situation. You'll see that the numbers have been coming down from just under 800 in December 2009 to just under 400 as we speak, 397 as we speak. And the labor costs have also steadily come down. Cut stock accuracy has improved. Quality also has improved with the appropriate accreditation. It has been selected
by Business Jet OEM to supply Business Jet winglets. So there's some thin silver lining on the horizon, but I think this needs to be maximized. Regarding the strategic scenarios confronting the company going forward, it's well known by now that Irisuit has submitted an unsolicited conditional proposal to acquire the company in December 2010. Discussions are ongoing. Unfortunately, we're not directly privy to those discussions, so we will not be able to give you a sense of how they are going, but clearly these are very important discussions in our view, so much so that if these are successful, I think they will help quite immensely to take the company out of its current loss-making situation. The company is revising its business plans to include a number of interventions to turn it around, building a robust revenue pipeline and targeting several OEMs which are listed there. They are also involved in contract negotiations with key customers all over the world. They are managing their cash flow very tightly, and they are seeking to improve their balance sheet solvency. And of course, the scope to reduce further rental footprint, as well as the cost of non-core activities. This is the yellow arrows shows where the company seeks to consolidate its operations from. In terms of the value proposition of the business plan, the return on investment is targeted to be positive from year 6. Job creation is around 3,000 direct and indirect workers. The company is paying great attention to the government strategies, the policy environment of government, with particular focus on the National Industrial Policy and Industrial Policy Program, where the activities of the company are targeted. This is advanced manufacturing, as well as initiatives in the science and technology space, the 10-year innovation plan led by the Department of Science and Technology. And I might add, the evolution of defense policy from the Department of Defense. Those are key policy initiatives in terms of which the company seeks to leverage opportunities. Regarding future prospects, the Airbus A400M price negotiations would be critical, looking at new business opportunities with the Tier 1 OEMs, export earning targets of over 95%, as well as, as I indicated, maintaining this presence in the advanced manufacturing sector. With regard to technology, these are the technologies that the company possesses, and these clearly are very unique technologies which we would be advised as a country to preserve and to develop for the future. The company operates in the high technology and advanced manufacturing sector, such as aerospace, and strongly supports the transition to a knowledge-based economy as outlined in policy documents. The end state organogram for the organization is indicated there. The intention is to really maintain a lean and mean operation with the functions on the left side in red being either outsourced or shared
with other parts of the Dinel group. But those are the sort of core capabilities that the company will maintain. And this will be based on a steady state production of about 24,400 fuselage sets per year. This is a very important company in economic terms. The jobs it maintains or stimulates at least in the region of 30,000 jobs, both direct and indirect. Revenues of 700 million rand pays about 180 million rand in taxes. And earned about 400 million from exports. I've indicated that the national policy action plan of the Department of Trade and Industry has identified advanced materials and aerospace under cluster 3. We're working with the company to identify opportunities internationally. This is a highly technology intensive sector. And therefore, we see that there would be opportunities if the company can clinch a wider set of customer networks internationally. In regard to the way forward, the discussions with Aerosuit are continuing. The company will implement this business plan, which the elements of which I've just on a high level outlined. Of course, the funding remains a critical issue, and we are working with the Treasury to address this issue. We've now extended about guarantees, Treasury guarantees, to the tune of 1.8 billion rand for the immediate future to keep the company afloat. But it is in a very challenging situation, which we are, the department, closely monitoring, and we hope that with the success of these initiatives, the company can be put on a more sounder footing. I'll leave it there, Chair, and we can take some questions. I should have said I'm here with Anthony Kamungomba, who's the senior person in the department responsible for TNL, and I'm sure he has much longer experience working with this company, and so you should be able to assist with the questions that the House may have. Thank you very much.
Let's first check if he has any additions. You want to add anything to what the DG presented?
Chairperson, just to outline that, even right now, as we are faced with this unconditional offer from Aerosuit to acquire DSA in order to continue producing the F400M work packages within South Africa, that failing, it's on the basis of if. We don't want to be in a situation where we put our eggs in one basket and say, okay, maybe the resolution of DSA would be a transfer of the work packages to Aerosuit. It's on that basis that we've been looking at other options. If that transaction doesn't come to execution, then we'll have to in-house look at other methodologies to resolve the crisis that is currently faced with in DSA. I just wanted to outline that.
List a few questions, and if can just note this. I think the one was that there was talk about Dinel Aerostructures looking for equity partners to improve its financial position. And if this is still the case, you know, this was really to sort out its financial challenges. And that, I think Dinel was once penalized for failing to meet deadlines, you know. Whether or not there are still fines outstanding on this. And what led to the failure to meet these deadlines. And from the male perspective, how does the arms manufacturing market look like? You know, does the male see itself performing better in the market in 2011, 2012? I know you've already given the challenges that it's confronted with. And maybe, in your view, the DG, Dinel's future as a strategic asset, especially in looking at the entity's loss-making projection for 2011-2012, and possibly beyond that, because it's just continuing all the time. Yeah, I think I'll leave it at that, if you could just answer to those few. And I've noted Honorable Dr. Kornoff, Honorable Nana, Honorable Van Dalen, Honorable Bowman, Honorable Mukwena. You indicate whether you want all, you want to take all the questions, or three at a time. DG, you'll just do you want to take all the questions? Or do we take three at a time?
We can take all.
All.
We can have more than one round.
Yes.
It's not suit the two big questions.
Okay. Okay, we'll have two rounds then. It is Honorable Kornoff, Honorable Nana, Honorable Van Dalen, Honorable Bowman, and Honorable Mukwena. Honorable Hololo. Wait for the second round. Honorable Dr. Kornoff.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the DG and his team for the presentation, very brief, but to the point presentation. Some of the questions I'm going to ask may be commercially sensitive, so if it's commercially sensitive, we don't want to discuss it in a I think in the public, because and then you need to indicate to us, because there are negotiations going on, and normal practice is not to discuss it in the public and only announce and make announcement afterwards. But anyway, this situation of DSA is coming with this committee for a very long time. It's not the first time that we have the presentation on the state of DSA. As a matter of fact, the DSA as a business unit is the only unit that is making such a huge loss currently, like you've indicated in your presentation, that is affecting the whole of the NEL. So your colleague has indicated and he used the word crisis, and I want to agree with that. It is an ongoing crisis, not since today or yesterday, but for a period of time. So against that background, I'm going to ask these questions. I was fighting elections, so I probably missed most of April. But why did Saab exit in April from this deal? They came in 2007. 4 years later, they exit. They're 20% share. If you can just, I missed that, whether it was in the public domain or not. My second question is, and I think I'm linking up to what the chairperson has asked, is do we regard DSA as strategic or sovereign? Where does it fit into the mold of national importance for South Africa, for the National Defence Force? I can't get the feeling whether we're talking a sovereign entity or a strategic entity, or an entity that is, it's good to have, but we can do without it, or an entity that is sovereign, we have to have it at all costs. So if you could clarify for us, to the committee, whether you regard it as sovereign. Thirdly, there's no funding, as I understand, from government in future for state-owned entities. Not in the current budget, not in the medium-term expenditure framework. So if we say there's no lifeline, no rescue package going to exit from the Department of Public Enterprises, then the funding crisis still exists. And we need to talk, and you need to inform us how are we going to overcome that funding crisis. You can probably the other questions will be around the Erosuit. I haven't seen it. My last remark, your end state is based on a production of 24 A400Ms. That's huge. And I don't see the ends meet between the foreseen end state producing or supplying to 24 productions of A400Ms and the current status of DSA. The bridge for me is just too wide. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm tempted to let it pass because the first question by Dr. Koronoff, not really. As we get response on the first question, I would then be able to weigh whether my line of questioning would be relevant.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. This seems like the same story as PBMR, where the international funders, which was Westinghouse then, and now SAAB, they are withdrawing, and the state ends up with the sole ownership of this company. It looks like the mice are jumping off the ship. So it raised serious alarm bells. Why have they left? Don't they have any hope for this project? Why should we keep on supporting it if nobody else has hope for it? You know, I say sell it. So I feel sorry for you that have to face the firing line today. But our concern is, like with PBMR, the retention of the workers and the intellectual property for South Africa. So it's no use just to keep on going as a company just for an employment agency for certain people. I mean, it doesn't make sense. So please explain to me or convince me that this is not the way we are going, and this we need to keep it. I mean, otherwise I don't see why we should keep it. Thank you.
Yes, I think I'm just going to follow up with on your slide 5. Obviously, there was a loss and then a huge loss in 2008-09. But there's been an improvement over the last 2 years. Now, and I think I've covered with the other question. Do you see that perhaps we can turn this thing around if we continue? Because now there's been an improvement and improvement. Are we able to turn it around? And then I would like to just pick up on something that EG said on slide 6 under operations. He said that margins on all contracts, however, remain under pressure and are currently unacceptable, and then just as an aside almost said it will require an intervention. And perhaps if you are able to just elaborate a little bit on that. Under the employment, I'd like to just get clarity, I think, more than anything else. Your slide 9 refers to your current total. Obviously, these things are very technical. You're talking about heads here, 397, and then in the new plan, reducing that to 258. But we talk about job creation of
3,000. Now, the 397 and the 258, is that only your head of department, your technical staff? That's the 3,000 jobs then involve people who are not technical. And then Aerosud, you mentioned, and I think I heard you correctly, when you were dealing also with the slide, I don't know where it was, about 11. You mentioned that, and I think I heard you correctly, you were not part of the discussions with Aerosud. I don't understand that. And perhaps just some clarity on that. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I've got several questions, but I'll break them into two parts. The first question, and I'm speaking under correction here, to be clarified in respect of the protocol of this presentation, whether it was supposed to be the DP itself presented to us on behalf of Dinel, or whether it's supposed to be the leadership of Dinel itself coming to present here. I appreciate the presentation made by the DG here, which puts everything into perspective. But my worry is that most of the problems that Dinel is experiencing are largely attributed to leadership. So I think the leadership protocol of this presentation perhaps is much as we appreciate the fact that the DG is honored as respect of this particular committee, but I would have liked that the leadership should have been dragooned to come here. And I'm going to the context here. The context that when we went to Shelly Beach for the strategic workshop, we had the leader of Dinel there, as well as the CEO or the chairperson coming there, and just sat there for exactly 15 minutes and just packed his bags and said, "So I just came in to show my nose, I'm off. And so is going to answer all questions." Now, I was double perturbed, and perhaps I might have exceeded my threshold of anger there, an emotional outburst, because I couldn't believe it, that the government has been pumping in a lot of money, $2 billion in my last call, recall, and for a perpetually loss-making entity. So that's the first point I want to make. The second point, that's a point of leadership, I feel very strongly about. Not that when they would put leadership necessarily, you'll make a profit, but the good leadership will be accountable, to be sensitive, and can make contingency plans so that we as politicians don't just come in at the end and appear to be riding a high horse and not a shame of appreciation for everything that the SOEs are doing. We do have a responsibility to support you, but we have got this fiduciary the responsibility also because the taxpayer is funding this thing. Linked to that is, of course, what I heard you say in DG, that there is a guarantee of 1.8 billion in order to, for the government, in order to keep Dinel afloat. The last point is, I'm just asking a devil's advocate question here without preempting the recommendations of the PRC, Presidential Review Commission on off-state SOEs. What would be the NAV, net asset value of Dinel, if we were to take a decision and say we're closing this thing down now? What is it actually worth, and what would be the liability to the state? Thank you.
Thanks very much, Chairperson and members, for those questions. As I said, I'm going to rely on my colleagues here to assist. Let me deal with at least those questions that I feel comfortable dealing with. That Dale will deal with the others. I think the fundamental question really is under what sort of circumstances would this
company, and TNL as a group, really flourish and thrive as businesses. So we have to go back to the model. The model of TNL was a model where they were set up to produce for the South African Defence Force. Okay, that's the logic of this whole dispensation we have here. And we know that, on the other hand, like, and here's a question around the arms manufacturing industry outlook, that the defense budgets are under pressure worldwide. Okay? The consequence of which in other countries, and we would have to also move very strongly in that direction, subject to the necessary policy conditions. There's a lot of consolidations, strategic partnerships all over the world that are developing, which DNL has not fully integrated itself in, because I don't think we have clarified the policy foundation for an appropriate model, business model for the company. So it's something which between ourselves, public enterprises, and the Department of Defense, we need to close that loop. Because it then goes to answer the question, what is it in DSA do you want to keep? Okay. If you look at it as a business, it's tempting to say, well, let's dispose of this thing. It's not performing well. But it operates in a very strategic area where government, and led by the Defense Force, the Department of Defense, has to say that in terms of our defense strategy going forward, in terms of the vision for defense for the country, these are the capabilities that we would like to keep at home. We would like to keep them in TNL and some of the subsidiaries of TNL, because these are unique technologies that have been developed over a long time. You don't wake up one morning and just suddenly throw them out. So there has to be a careful exercise done. Now, I'm pleased because I'm hearing that the Minister of Defense is tabling a strategic document that will outline what the future policy direction for defense, which will then inform some of the key strategic decisions that we will have to take as far as DNL and the subsidiaries are concerned. Unfortunately, because of the nature of the topic, you know, it's very hard to say more than that, I think. But I know that we have been asked by the Joint Defense Committee to come back here next week to discuss precisely this topic. And hopefully, once we have a clarity as to where the Department of Defense wants to go, and what are going to be the requirements, you know, of the Defense Force, it will inform these decisions. Otherwise, I would be preempting. If I said no, in fact, actually, you know, DSA is a feature for disposal, I'll be preempting that exercise, which is an exercise which it's been coming a long time as well. Unfortunately, you know, when I try to establish how long has this been coming from and when is it going to be finalized, I found that it's been coming a long way, and it's very unclear as to when it will be finalized. But I think because we are now being called in Parliament to engage on this, there will probably be the clarity, and we will have a sense of what the thinking is, you know, from the Department of Defense.
result of them.
Chairperson, I think just continuing on the line of Dineo's current mandate, it is recognized as a strategic asset as the DG has outlined. So we're basically trying to explore a very structured mechanism to ensure that alignment between the Dineo business with the strategic and sovereign requirements of the South African National Defence Force. But this would basically be based on a clear position from the DOD. Now, I think I just want to say here that Dineo as a company, I think members will know that it's actually made up of 9 different entities. We tend to look at Dineo as one company. It's really 9 different entities, and these are divided into precisely defense-related businesses and the aerostructures business. So I think just to allude to the question that was raised in relation to aerostructures specifically. Whether this was a strategic and sovereign requirement for the South African economy, I think when we look at the industrial policy frameworks that we have as a country, such as IFAP 2, I think it does highlight in the quest for developing a knowledge based economy. Within South Africa, and if we are to position ourselves at a competitive advantage within the global market, we need to develop advanced manufacturing capability. And just looking at the aerostructures business itself, the technology spillovers from that business actually result in skills migration to adjacent industries. So where you have an engineer who's project managing the building of this aircraft part, it's not like that the skills out of there are just limited to producing that kind of aircraft part. He will build that capability, and this capability can actually be applied to other parts of the economy. And we need to build our competitive advantages if we're going to compete in the global market. When we look at the numbers that have been put there of 3,000, these are in the direct jobs as well as the indirect jobs, because this business is also based on suppliers who are coming in. In as much as within DSA you might have 400 employees, this business is based on getting suppliers from various players within the South African economy. So you're actually creating a supplier base within the South African economy, and those are some of the other indirect jobs that you actually get, and that's the number of 3,000 estimated as indirect jobs arising from this particular business. In relation to the equity partnerships, members will recall that Dineo at a group level undertook to a turnaround strategy, which was co-authored with the Department of Public Enterprises in 2005. And part of one of the pillars of that turnaround strategy was to bring in equity partners into some of the Dineo businesses. And this was basically aimed to increase market access. A lot of these businesses, we recognize that the South African market is small. If this business is going going to be sustainable, it needs to grow its turnover and access new markets, be able to sell its product in other markets. And given the nature of the defense industry, it does face protectionist tendencies in certain markets and that kind of thing. So these kind of collaboration agreements, JVs and equity partnerships are actually aimed at first opening up access to other markets, mostly in Europe and the Western world, and then also to benefit from skills and technology transfers from those markets. And in that way, we have seen Carl Zeiss, Optronics, Rheinmetall, so the munitions business has made a very serious, significant turnaround since the numbers that we used to see in 2006-07. From the time these equity partnerships, Table Maker Africa, the contribution to the revenues of the NEL have been very, very significant. Obviously, we're still seeing here this equity partnership that was entered with SAB. That has been the biggest challenge that we're faced with. And we should come from the point that DSA first entered a contract to supply these work packages to the F400M contract, and then they sought to get in some technological capability into the business by bringing in SAP. In terms of the shareholder agreement that was signed then, SAP had a put option to exit the business at the end of March 2011. So they always had that option that because they were coming in to at least up the bring in some technology into the company. Initially, I think they actually had some management involvement in that company, just to because at the time that Dinel got into this work package, they did not have the full breadth of skills to actually deliver on these skills, and the objective was to develop that capability domestically. So we are looking now. We're faced with a point where we have to step back and breathe and say, okay, fine. We have developed some of these capabilities. We need as a country and from a policy position, we need to sit back and say, do we want to retain this capability within South Africa, knowing the benefits that. And the spillovers that are arising from here, or should we then decide that Airbus takes away these work packages to somewhere else? So that's where we're really looking at now, saying yes, we think that even if it was a way of resolving the DSA problem, the Aerosuit transaction would be a good thing because it retains the work packages within the South Africa and all the skills that arise from there. Versus exiting the business completely and transferring these work packages to other countries, which leaves us worse off. Yes, it does require a lot of funding commitment as the honourable member rightly put, we haven't indicated any funding for the SOE over the next coming period, and that's why we have gone the route, and in our engagement with National Treasury, we have gone the route of extending the guarantees rather than putting in cash into the business.
just to as an interim support mechanism to ensure that they go through this this whole turnaround.
Thank you, Chair. With regard to penalties on the A400M program, Dinala has never was never penalized on the program on in terms of delays and stuff like that. If anything, there was just cost escalation in the program due to delays from the side of Airbus in terms of technical delays from the side of Airbus, which sort of affected the revenues or the turnover of the company, hence the losses sort of escalated in 2008. I think that that was the time when the program as a whole experienced significant delays.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, something is not adding up here. I may be deaf or I may not understand English. There was one question that was asked by a member, I think it was Dr. Koronov, that why Saab exited. And I didn't hear a response to that. Sorry? There was no response to it. And now what I get from the DDG is that if we may consider closing shop, Airbus would move these work packages elsewhere in the world. My question probably is, in trying to compound what Dr. Koronov has asked already, is if these work packages are viable and would probably yield good results, Why has Saab exited? The second one is around Aerosuit. It sounds French to me. It sounds French. It sounds like a French company. I do not know. I wanted to ask, where is it from? I understand the complex. I understand the nature of negotiations for this kind of transactions. You can't really say much about it. I'm glad that we have just been told that, in fact, Dinel Aerostructures is a strategic asset to us. Now, what I want to check, I think that it's a strategic asset, and yet it's not performing to its optimal. As a businessman myself, I know the best time to negotiate a transaction, particularly of acquiring some shareholding in another company, is when that company is not doing well, because they're obviously under pressure, on the back foot. They are most likely to take anything that comes their way. Now can I check, it's really a pity that Dinel is not here. Can I check in relation to Dinel Aerostructures, how vulnerable are we, without really giving much in as far as the details of the actual transaction, how vulnerable are we? Could we still, are we in a position to negotiate a deal that would be favorable to the interests of the nation? And the third one, Chairperson, is in slide 9 of the presentation. There has been some downscaling in as far as personnel is concerned. which is appreciated, because it somehow impacts on your wage bill. But what I want to check, it's been spoken about many times that we have a shortage of skills in this country. I see in slide 9 we had about close to 800 people employed. To date, it's just below 400, 397 to be precise. And I would assume that most of the 400 that has been either laid off, retrenched, are skilled personnel, particularly in areas where as the country we need more skills, your artisans, engineers, you name them. And this kind of skills, Chairperson, are in most cases these skills have been acquired by these individuals whilst working at Denel, and therefore as the taxpayer I have paid, I have subsidized them in acquiring their skills. And there is a habit in our country that we train people and we let them go loose. What has happened to these people? Are they still in the country? Can you still trace them in the light of our own skills shortage as the nation, and they left the country? What has happened to them? Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, yes, it's been said to us by the DG that Denel was originally established, to assist the South African Defence Force, if you look at the model. At present, Chairperson, I'm not aware of any war. The only war in South Africa at present is the war between the DA and the ANC, but that is a verbal war by mouth. I'm not aware of any conventional war approaching South Africa. And what I'm concerned about is once the strategy by the Department of Defense has been put or tabled in Parliament, you also said that then there will be decisions being taken on the future of this Denel South Area structures. And that's very important because, as already been said, we don't want people, unnecessarily see losing their jobs or skills lost by the market or... But on the other hand, we also can't, bail out and feed by the taxpayer anymore. So I would like to ask you also, Chair, that we take an agreement that once that decision has been taken by your department, after the strategic plan by the Department of Defense has been put to the public, that before the implementation of the decision, it must come back to this committee then again. Chair, I think it's very important for the committee then to have a part before the implementation of a final decision, so that we can be sure that the correct decision will be taken. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to follow up on a question that was raised by Honorable Mukwena, and it was not responded to. Because for me, if we're in a hearing, I would have raised it as a point in limine and say, let's deal with it before we deal with all others. So the question is, why is Denel not here? We are listening to a presentation on Denel. I mean, the practice has been, according to my experience, would have had Denel presenting with the department in attendance. Unless there are things that we do not know, maybe things that we need to know. Is there a leadership crisis in Denel? Are there problems of leadership and management in Denel? Have they absconded in a way? Or maybe has the department lost confidence in that leadership to the extent that they can't even come here? Like I say, the practice had been, if we were listening to ESCOM, it would be either the chairperson or the CEO, and with the department in the background. What is happening here? Are there things that we do not understand? Maybe it may even explain why SAB jump ship. We know, we hear that according to their contract, they had an option of leaving. But you can't just leave because there is an option for you to leave. You usually leave because there are things that make you unhappy. And this question has come, and I've really not had a direct answer. But also, Honorable Chairperson, in response to Honorable Kuranov's answer, we are told it's strategic, maybe even sovereign, to have it. Now, I want to balance this with what I hear of a possible or a pending acquisition by Aerosud. The two don't go together. And for me, it may be that I there is something that I'm missing in terms of terminology of business. For me, if you acquire something, it means you take it over. If maybe if a majority, you become a majority, maybe Aerosud is coming in. I don't know at what percentage of shareholding. Are we going to hand it completely over? But also, is it not against what we are saying of it being strategic and even sovereign? The last question. I have been listening. You know, there are times when we are addressed and we are briefed. For me, there's always a very, very simple thing. Why are we? Why are they here? Why are they here today? Brief us maybe, but hoping for what? Because what presenters always don't do is they don't tell you, you know, a recommendation. This is what we want from the committee. Is there something that, some kind of assistance that they want? If there is, I've not heard it. Maybe they must just try plain English, plain British, and tell us what is expected of us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I've got two questions here for clarity. The first one will be on the A400M. In that, honourable members, initially the A400M program was intended to for relief in this war-torn countries in Africa. My question there is that, is it still the case? Is it still the case that these A400Ms are still going to be doing exactly that? That would be the first one. The second one is that in 1994, South Africa has made a lot of friends than enemies, because we all know that the previous the government, the apartheid one actually, was making a lot of enemies. Now, this defense entity, DINEL, actually, you said it has got about 9 divisions. Now, this one, the DSA, is making a lot of losses. In the previous administration, I asked the Minister Alec Erwin about this because we were very concerned in the committee that there were so much losses incurred by DSA. And I asked him actually to say that what is the possibility, for instance, of turning around some of these loss-making entities, for instance, DSA, to maybe turn it around and manufacture commercial vehicles. Like, if you take for an example, we could do like what Rolls-Royce in England is doing. They are manufacturing aeroplanes, engines for aeroplanes. They are also manufacturing commercial vehicles like your luxury Rolls Royce. In that, I was asking this because I wanted to know, if is there Also in England, you'll find that the police force actually is using Land Rover. Land Rover is used for commercial. It is also used for by the police, by the army, and all that. I think in that way, we can go a long way. We've got the market. We are strategic in the continent. I think let's consider turning around this thing rather than closing shop and then losing a lot of expertise in the process. I think if we could do that, think about it in a way. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think every question asked could be adequately responded to or answered after that strategic meeting. As of now, I don't think the department would be able to give us answers that would satisfy us. Key to this would be for the leadership of DINEL to come and make a presentation to this committee. That is primary and key. Because if you look at the history of DINEL, has always been loss-making, until in 2005, a decision was taken to strategically turn things around. That was in 2005. Where are we missing it? In 2011, we still have to turn things around. What is happening now? That the entity is yes, these sub aerostructures are a strategic asset for a country. But what are we missing in terms of running these structures? Something is amiss there. And as long as the Department of Public Enterprises and Defense have not corrected that, then we are going to talk in circles. Ask questions that would be very, very difficult to be responded to. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I wanted to ask a question on the further outsourcing of non-core activities, but I'm going to leave that. Let's keep that. Director General, you pointed out in your presentation that in the Industrial Policy Action Plan 2, there is an aerospace focus. I've seen it. I've read it. Our department is part of that aerospace focus. I assume that DSA, the product we're talking about, is part of that focus. If that is a focus, then it is a strategic plan. And then I think we should not bother further we should support it, because that's a national decision that was taken. Can I just say in the end, it seems to me very clear that the defense review of the DOD, or strategic intent of the department, has been outstanding since 2005. It is on the table of the minister. She announced it in her budget speech, so it should come to the fore in the next couple of weeks, if not days. So I suggest we wait for that strategic focus of the Department of Defense, because that will indicate what their requirements are. And with all respect, DPE, DSA cannot move unless they know what the need of the Defense Force is. So we're starting to talk in circles here. So I would suggest, Chairperson, that we wait. Await the requirements of DOD strategically, because that will also include the aerospace structure sector. Number two, there is a presidential review commission, which is due to report by the end of this year. And we don't know what they're going to recommend. So secondly, I suggest we also wait for that review to come to the fore. Thirdly, I think it will be good if we can consider as a committee to pay a physical visit to DSA. It's next to Oua Tambo Airport. Even if we have a subcommittee to visit, just to witness what is going on at the ground. We're talking here 1,500 kilometers away from this facility. Rather let us consider to visit as a committee or a subcommittee, report back here, to keep ourselves updated what is happening. And then in the meantime, we wait for the DOD defense review for the requirements, which will knock on to the DSA. And I hopefully what we're discussing here will be in place by the end of 2011. I think if we go beyond 2011 to find answers to the critical questions that we are engaging here, then I think I will be very concerned.
Maybe just to clarify something, our invite to the department was very clear that we want the briefing on the future of DSA. And I think that's a policy question which only the department, through the DG in this case, could come and present to us here. And we've had, and there was a concern amongst ourselves here regarding the future of DSA. Hence, we've extended the invite to come and hear from the department what the future looks like for DSA. So just for members who have raised the question regarding who should make this presentation here, that's really the reason why it is the department that's briefing us on this matter. And I think with regards to Dr. Koranov's suggestion or recommendation, that is already on our program, that the committee will be visiting Dinam. I don't know the date offhand, but it is in our program. Did you?
But I thank you for clarifying that we were invited. And I must also thank Honorable Koranhoff. I think that's really the approach. Because in a sense, what we were trying to say is that it's next to impossible for the DPE alone to take strategic decisions about Dinel and parts of Dinel without reference to Department of Defense. The company was set up on the basis that it would supply. In fact, some of the factors that account for the problems reside precisely in that space of the model, okay? Some of them, I think, generally, globally, we know that the world is much more peaceful place, and yes, it would be hard to imagine circumstances where South Africa could be involved in a conventional war, but we also know that countries maintain a minimum state of capability to maintain security and that type of thing. It was actually precisely those considerations that led to South Africa participating in the A400. This was a capability that the Defence Force thought they had. Now, of course, so we're not proceeding with the A400. I don't know whether they reassessed their needs in such a way that they don't need this thing anymore. But we are here where we are right now with commitments and some of the residual commitments. So the work packages are residual commitments arising from this arrangement, as it were. I think it's also important to the point we're making is, although, as my colleague was trying to explain, Dunel is a conglomerate of nine separate operating entities. Some of them are a lot more core to defense, right? They can only have exclusive use in defense. Others, like aerostructures, and that's why they have industrial development possibilities. They can be used to, I mean, Boeing is also interested in this capability. So yeah, it's possible you can configure something, you can restructure this operation in such a way that as a country we continue to be part of advanced manufacturing capabilities. But in the industrial economy, we've got the capability. We just need the right model as such. And so the industrial policy process will take us in that direction, subject to critical decisions that we are flagging needs to be taken around DSA and its place in the capabilities that our defense department feel we should have. There is another issue, by the way, where some people actually within the defense establishment say DINERA should not be with DPE, should be under them. Okay. So I'm hoping that if we don't develop, we don't initiate a process between ourselves, defense, to arrive at the right policy decisions, then hopefully the PRC, who should also be looking at this sector, I mean, these are big state-owned enterprises here, so I hope that they keep, they give some proper attention, they will be able to advise, you know, because I, you know, the jury is out as to what is the best model, you know, because you remember, Dinel was hived off AMSCO. And there was a certain understanding that perhaps you need an arm's length thing and so on. There are conflicts of interest, blah, blah, blah. So in considering where, you know, ultimately who should it report to, those are some of the things that need to be considered. So there are a lot of policy decisions out there that, to the extent that they remain unfinalized, will have a bearing on this entity, will have a bearing on the operations of DINEL in general terms. I was viewed as a South African company, and so, you know, the idea that in this space, to the extent that you know these activities can or be also industrial activities, this would be a vehicle. So we're not losing anything in the country, in this way. Even in terms of skills, by the way, if you can't keep them in DINEL, hopefully somebody in the economy has use for them, those engineers. If they leave the country, then there's a problem. You know, I'm not sure what's happening there, but my inclination is that my suspicion is that many of these who are still in the country, perhaps finding jobs in other operations, because we have a serious engineering skills shortage in the country. But of course, we also know that others leave. You know. So I don't think my colleagues can shed further light on that. So to go back to what Honorable Goranov suggested, let us see what are these initiatives coming from the defense, you know, establishment through the Minister of Defense, and let's see whether out of arising out of that we can either have immediate answers or at least create a process that enables us to reach some of the decisions. These are very difficult decisions, but we, given the state of the business and the continued loss-making situation, we have to take them
sooner rather than later. Yeah, I think.
Chairperson, I think I'll just start with the question around the net asset value of Nel, and I'll bolt onto that the whole 2005 general strategy and what has happened since then. Just looking at the 2010 financials, at an equity level, the equity was at 644 million. Which would be the assets, let's say, liabilities of the company. And just to allude to the 2005 strategy, I think in the main, Dinel had made significant progress from 2005. We're looking at a company with a loss in excess of 1.6 billion. Per year in 2005, and in 2010 this loss was brought down to 246 million. And just going back to the point where I made the distinction between the defense related businesses versus the aerostructures business, the major risk that Dinel is actually faced with is DSA, because even looking at the 2010 financials, you will see that Dinel taken with the DSA taken out actually made a profit. Coming from the 1.6 billion losses to a profit in for the defense related industries, and that's why for us we recognize that as the biggest risk, and that is our primary area of focus in terms of resolving Dinel. We recognize that, yes, even in the other businesses, while they have shown improvement, there's still scope for further operational efficiencies, and that whole alignment with the DoD, which is something that we need to dwell on. But we I think it needs to be acknowledged that from 2005 there has been some improvement. DG mentioned that Aerosuit is a South African company, so for us that's why we took the position that if that was one of the solutions to be considered, the fact that these skills and the capabilities was actually remaining within the South African economy, then it was an option to be considered. In relation to the exit of Saab from DSA, as I mentioned before, the shareholder agreement was signed in 2006, and it had provisions for Saab exiting after a certain period of time, which they could choose to exit or not choose to exit. Yes, we recognize that they have seen that there are challenges in this business. It's probably why they decided to exercise this option that was available to them within the shareholder agreement. And as Weekend mentioned, we see DSA, their financial position has, on the one hand, been impacted by the delays on the overall F-100M program. I think it's common knowledge that deliveries of these aircraft has been delayed for a number of years. And as you are a supplier who has brought in all the resources to supply and develop components of this aircraft, as long as there's a delay in the actual ramp up, because this is a key profound issue with this actual component that DSA is producing. DSA actually started from the development of this product. not basically just a case where, you know, they were given a blueprint to develop from. So even the skills that are in there to be able to develop a component that can withstand such stresses as in aerostructures is quite significant. So as long as they went through the whole development phase. Now the delay in the actual production, which would mean revenues coming in into the company, has impacted the company's financial situation, bringing with it significant risk, and we're very concerned because that has an impact on the margins. And DJ alluded to, you know, the margins, the operating margins that we're faced with. That, you know, in the main, they are actually unacceptable. So, in rethinking this whole future value proposition and the revised plan, part of that would be looking at sitting down with them to renegotiate some aspects of those contracts, you know, to make it more commercially viable.
Can I just also deal with the issue which was asked? Chair, I mean, you know, it's really the prerogative of the committee as to whether it's us who are invited or us and Dinel or Dinel alone. Our understanding was that we were invited alone. In fact, it turns out in the instance of the joint defense committee, they've invited Dinel themselves. We will attend as well, but the invitation was directly to Dinel. That's number one. Number two, there are no leadership. There's no leadership crisis at Dinel at this point in time. I think that you know, the leadership succession will follow the normal course at Dinel, which is with, you know, the CEO. I think has already given notice that he will leave in a few months' time, and the board will be changed in the normal course of things. So there is no leadership crisis.
I just wanted to know all the losses that Danel has made over the years. With new accounting practices, you have to factor in when you have a signed contract and there are penalty clauses, you have to budget already now for those losses in the future. So how many, like with Eskom, they had a 9 billion rand loss because they had these special pricing agreements, and if they couldn't deliver, they would have to pay a penalty of 9 billion rand. So how many of these losses that Danel has made, including aerospace, is accounted to that specifically?
Thank you, Chairperson. The issue of acquisition by Aerosuit is that the question was, are they taking it all complete over, taking it over completely? The shareholding, I'm not sure whether, because my understanding is that I'm glad it's a South African company, private company. Do you know something about the ownership of Aerosuit?
Yes, Jefferson, two quick ones. Completely DG has contextualized his answer and his question of leadership as well. Two quick cuts. Vacancy profile of the net. Let's say hand side is exact size. I don't know how many vacancies did the net actually have. And linked to that is, we know the figure, the current figure, the staff comes yes now. But let's assume that the vacancies were all filled in and expertise brought into the net. To what extent do you think that would have assisted the NAR to get rid of the
performance morass that is sunk in. In other words, when one looks at the various departments of government, there are too many departments, and they're not filled in, local government, etc., etc., and that affects service delivery. Now, some of the others have been running for since 1994, since we are running. Now, if it's almost like if you imagine there's a Beetle, the state is a Beetle, and you need to replace tires, you know, wipe out, etc., etc., and just drive. Obviously, that car won't be roadworthy. So that is the context in which I'm using the car as a metaphor, that if we had managed to fill in those vacancies, would we not have been in a position to obviate, have this problem obviated of Sinel being as a struggling chief now? That's number one. The second one is that of R&D. I would like to find out how the R&D, the research and development unit of Sinel actually functions. Well, without diverging the sensitive, secrecy, both of the nature of the industry. But just the essence of this question is to understand what direction they want to take, what continues to have in place in order to ensure that the is not just stagnant, but they are developing, they are researching in certain areas to ensure that more products are available that will get the nail out of the state in respect of diversification in the center and civilian innovation. That's one of the points of all this innovation. In other words, if it is difficult to get on the way, so the world has changed now, the landscape has changed, there's less need for militarization, etc., getting involved into making civilian products, etc. So that will be answered by the unit of R&D.
More than the CEO, whoever, so that this relevant question can be answered. Please. Sorry, sir. I'm going to ask Anthony to deal with those questions.
Chairperson, in relation to Sinel's losses, in the main, I'm focusing on DSA here. It has not suffered any penalties. That's why it has managed to deliver all the work packages in terms of the contract. If it was to fail to deliver, then it would encounter significant losses. At this point, they have managed to keep to the terms of the contract. We know that Aerosud is a private company wholly owned by South Africans. I don't have the specific details of the shareholding at this point. In relation to the vacancy profile, in the main, I think one of the strategies out of the 2005 turnaround strategy that was put in then was actually to increase operational efficiencies, including the utilization of labor. And to that extent, yes, there was some restructuring to get it more lean and efficient. So I think the vacancy problem is not a very big problem within the NEL, because it's very focused in terms of the kind of skills profile that you're looking at. You're really looking at, in the main, at engineers and technologists and that kind of skill set. So it's not a very big problem. I think I agree very, very strongly with your point around R&D spend. And this is an area that has been of concern from a departmental point of view, in that, looking at the peer companies, the percentage of spend, senior revenue that is spent on R&D, given this kind of industry, I think the NEL is indeed lagging, and that's a consequence of its financial situation. But it could do more to innovate and come up with new products. Obviously, in looking at the broader strategy, you would want them to have that balance. they apply some of their defense technologies to other applications in order to increase revenues.
Let me thank members who attended the meeting and for their participation. I'd like to thank members of the media who are here, our staff members. This brings us to the end of this meeting, and the meeting is adjourned. Thank you so much. Honorable Kuranov, Honorable Sonto, please don't go.